We recorded this podcast before we heard the tragic news about the passing of our good friend Paul Salmon. Paul was like an aviation dad to us. He was featured in episode 3 of our series Heading West and dedicated a lot of time to helping us out. He went above and beyond for us, and he was always looking out for us when he knew we were flying. We are thinking about Paul's family during this difficult time, so we wanted to let you know before we jump into this episode of the podcast.
Welcome back to another episode of Tuxedo Time.
Where we wear tuxedos and it is time.
Podcast edition.
After show edition.
Heading West edition.
Can you believe that we just nailed that intro and it's been like 9 months since we made a podcast?
I'm not going to lie. I was rehearsing it in my head. And when you were setting up the cameras, I was like, oh my God, wait. Welcome back to another episode of podcast edition.
You nailed it. And as did I. And I did not rehearse it.
Well, you know what? You're just that much better about being on camera and doing these things.
No, I think the flow helped me. Mm-hmm. I was like, we connected.
We did.
Do you know what I mean? I was like looking deep into your eyes and I was like, bitch.
Why did you stare into my soul?
Hi. Holy crap. It's been a long time since we made a podcast. What happened?
We're terrible.
Yeah, we are terrible.
You know why?
Why?
It's because when we made the decision to do this podcast, a video podcast,
it became a lot more difficult.
The barrier to entry, more friction.
Yes, because not only do we have one angle, we have three angles.
Yes.
Which makes it very difficult.
But this isn't why we're recording this podcast now.
Nope. Wait, what?
We're not going to talk about how crappy we are.
No, we're not talking about how crappy we are. We're actually doing the Heading West after show. Mm-hmm. And hopefully this will be the restart of this podcast.
You know what we should have done?
What?
Was film this 6 months ago.
After the trip?
When we actually finished the trip.
I wouldn't have been able to finish this 6 months ago.
This would have been more of a negative.
Because you would have been like, what did you think about the trip? And I would have been like, it was a lot.
It's done.
It was something.
It was something. You're just like.
Just blah. And you know what? Even during, like, if we filmed it during the series, I would have been just like mush. Mm-hmm. Because I went through the mid-series depression, remember? Mm-hmm. Where I was just like, what is life? Is this over yet? And then I got really excited to finish it up. Okay, we're talking about Heading West. First, before we get into the after show, which we're going to be talking about in this episode, the more so production side of the series, I want to say a massive thank you to our series sponsors, ProMaster, Melanote, and Vero, for coming on board and supporting either some of the upcoming videos to the series or the actual series itself. We appreciate you so much. We also appreciate all of our friends who were a part of the series, who met up with us, who let us crash on their couch or in their extra rooms, who flew with us, who, you know, met up with us for dinner. We also appreciate every single one of you who showed up on Sunday mornings at 10 a.m. for the premiere, who watched the videos at all, commented, shared, bought merch.
Let's have a round of applause for them. Oh, there we go.
That's for you, everybody. Thank you. Seriously, it was a lot of fun, and the response for the series has been incredible.
It's been probably the best feedback you've gotten for any project yet.
Best feedback I've gotten from any project yet. Best performing series by far from any series that we've put out. So every single video has been a 1 out of 10 or 2 out of 10, which is, for YouTube, really... I've had a lot of 10 out of 10s this year.
10 out of 10 for the people who aren't familiar with YouTube analytics means that your video is performing the
worst.
Bottom of the barrel. Of the last 10 videos you perform, it's performing the worst.
Yes. And so if you get a 1 out of 10 or a 2 out of 10, that's kind of like, yeah, that's something to celebrate. I try not to look at that too much because mostly it's 10s out of 10s and I get really sad. But... I was curious about the series, and they were all 1 out of 10. So thank you. It was you who helped make them 1 out of 10 and 2 out of 10. So I appreciate y'all.
And in case you are listening to this for some reason and didn't just missed on our YouTube channel, we just released a big 7-part series.
6-part series.
Sorry, 6-part series.
Clearly didn't edit it.
Clearly.
6-part series. Continue.
Yeah. We did that. We flew a helicopter from Buffalo, New York, across the country to Torrance, California, because the helicopter needs to be rebuilt from the ground up, and we made a full 6-part docuseries documenting the entire cross-country helicopter trip which you can find on our YouTube channel.
Our main YouTube channel. Let me pull up the outline. First thing I want to talk about, we tried the YouTube premiere for the first time ever on a project launching on our main YouTube channel. Mm-hmm. It was amazing.
If you had to give it a 1 through 7, actually, you know what? Give it a Bristol number.
Because if it was a Bristol number, I would say it was a 4, because a 4 is the healthiest bowel movement. But if it was a YouTube rating, I would call it a 1 out of 10 experience.
Okay, I like that. Okay. I understand now where this falls on the spectrum.
Okay.
Of poop.
Going into it, we had never done a YouTube premiere before. And so for those of y'all who aren't familiar, maybe you didn't join us for the premiere, basically what it is we schedule this video to go live, but it goes live as if we are live. So you show up to the premiere, show up on time or a couple of minutes. You watch it with us. There's a live chat. We're there. We can kind of have these conversations together. But if you show up 10 minutes late and you turn on that video, you're watching 10 minutes and you can't start from the beginning until the video is over and the premiere is done.
Then you can watch it on demand.
And then you can watch it on demand. So I was really nervous. I had always wanted to try it, but I heard on X, formerly Twitter, that it tanks your YouTube channel. So I had not tried it because I was like, oh my God, I cannot risk tanking this YouTube channel with this series that I've worked on for 7 months. But you know what? I said, fuck it. I'm going to try it. It was the best.
Yeah. I mean, like, first of all,
1 out of 10 experience.
First of all, I mean, most people, these like YouTube gurus really don't know what they're talking about. Like,
I mean, it's all kind of just bullshit, really.
It's kind of like, oh, I think this is best practice based on my own interpretation, but you can't.
The only person I listen to is Renee.
Yeah, but you can't like.
The creator liaison.
You can't do experiments with it. There's no way you can randomize things and actually truly see what has an effect. There's so many random variables.
Yeah.
But I think what the problem is with premieres is that people would use them, but they wouldn't.
Tell anybody about doing it. Yeah.
It wouldn't advertise it like it was a real premiere. Right. Like newsflash, if you rented, if you rented an auditorium, had a real film premiere, but you didn't put up any posters, you didn't tell anybody about it, and then lo and behold, nobody showed up for it, like you wouldn't say premieres suck. They tank your business of making movies. It's like, no, you suck at advertising it. It's just like, mm-hmm. you know, so you have to treat it the same way, right?
Yeah.
And you rolled out with this thing like a friggin' marketing campaign.
Well, thank you.
And had like, you know, branded posters on your stories, had posts leading up to it, everything everyone knew, 10 a.m. Sunday morning. And interestingly enough, which is the first time I've ever seen anything where we've had multi-part series, I was taking note of like how many people logged on each premiere. Mm-hmm. And usually I feel like with series, it's like there's a lot of people at the beginning and then it kind of trails off.
Yeah.
As people kind of maybe lose interest. But this, every premiered episode had more and more people, and it was a steady upwards.
Yeah.
It was like almost like more and more people were getting invested in the series as it progressed.
Yeah.
And you had more people who were signing on for the premieres later in the story, in the series.
It was really cool to see like that level of support, but then also getting to interact with you in the live chat, with y'all in the live chat. That's a level of connection that we don't get when we just post a YouTube video on a Sunday. And we can't always commit to like premieres. Not everyone, like, I feel like they're a special occasion kind of thing, right?
Yeah, you don't overdo it.
Right. But it's just that level of connection that we don't get when we just like post a video. Like, yeah, we get the comment section, but like when you're watching it with us and commenting on things live and like we can answer your questions live and you know what I mean? It's just like a completely different experience. And I loved it.
Yeah, it was great.
Yeah, it was really fun. Somebody on Twitter tweeted me and they were like, I don't understand, like, is there some benefit from the algorithm to do the premiere? Because like, why would you do that? This is not for me. And like, I just want to be able to watch my video on demand. That's the whole point of it. And it's like, well, wait 25 minutes and it'll be on demand. There is no benefit from the algorithm. In fact, like you said, if you're not advertising it, nobody knows you're doing it, then there's a disadvantage, right? Because now you have this live video that people can't watch on demand and nobody knows about it. So they haven't prepared for it.
Probably like think of a situation where someone like something gets published. It's like, oh, there's a video this person, my, you know, like a creator that I follow published. They click on it and they start it and they have to start it like halfway through the video. Like, what? This is weird. Click off.
Yeah. And so that was my biggest worry with it. Right. So that's why I was like, I need to advertise the shit out of this. But you know, that's why we do this series, because I love the entire process of not only filming it and making the series, but branding it all and doing the whole rollout campaign and all the things. So, it brings me a lot of joy to do
Spoken
it.
Spoken like a true graphic designer.
Yeah. 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 So that was pretty cool. Premiere 10 out of 10, 1 out of 10. Sorry. Definitely do it again.
Bristol 4. Got it.
Yeah. Okay. Let's have a look.
The Bristol scale is a scale
Nobody, no.
Poop?
Fine, tell them. I know you want to.
It's a descriptor or a categorical way. It's a scategorical way. It's scategories for poop.
Yeah.
Yeah, of which there's seven.
Seven is like when you have gastro and you have earthquaking
Niagara Falls
liquid diarrhea, your butthole. You're pissing out your asshole. That's a level seven. Yeah. Class seven. What is it called? Bristol seven. I keep messing it up. I keep calling it like class level.
Whatever.
A Bristol one. Is,
okay, we don't need to talk
about
it.
Hard button.
You just told
you
me,
brought it up.
You told
like,
me you were like,
you
just, we're not going to go into the Bristol categories.
You started.
Proceeds
okay,
to outline all seven Bristol
excuse
categories.
Me. You started, as I was looking at the question, you said a Bristol, the Bristol
I just wanted
scale
to give them context
one
so they're
through
not
seven.
Like, what are you talking about?
I'm sorry, I thought you were going in deep.
We're not going
Mr.
in deep.
Mr. Bristol four, perfect healthy bowel movements constantly.
Yeah, must be nice. It
yeah,
is
yeah,
nice.
Must be.
It is. It's nice. It's fantastic.
Okay, we're going to talk about production. Because there was a really great question from Don Kramer Photography, who said, such a fun series, thank you. Heading West and coffee, great way to start Sundays. If you do a BTS video, I'd be curious to hear about how much of the story of the trip you had in mind ahead of time and how you go into editing afterwards when every day had changes to plans with no notice and if that differed from past series. Role specific, but we're getting in.
Very specific.
I'm also realizing that we should have recorded our YouTube video second because our energy levels are way higher.
Not usually the case.
No. Well, we had a warm up, see? Mm-hmm. So this should have been, we should have done it. Anyway, we didn't. Okay. Let's start with number one. How much of the story did you have in mind ahead of time?
Well, you had the entire thing planned out, but then it all went to shit on the first day.
So heading west, journey to overhaul. Originally, it was supposed to be 10 episodes. It ended up being six. So I had every single video planned out. Title, thumbnail, sketched, brief outline.
Can you show me your sketches?
Maybe after.
I love them.
Thank you. I love you.
All episodes,
yeah.
10.
So I had them kind of planned out as we started formulating the series and really nailing down the schedule. I realized this 10 is too many. It's not going to happen. So I scaled it back to 8. Then weather changes started popping up and I was like, there's no way this can be 8. This has to be 6 episodes. And that's what it ended up being. So before we left, it was 6 episodes. I had every single one pretty much planned. This is the title. This is the thumbnail.
10. Before we left, it was 10.
No, like leading up to it was 10.
Oh, leading up to it was 10. But before we left on our truncated plan, it was 6.
It was 6. Yeah. Right before we left, it was 6. So I had a title, a thumbnail sketch for all 6 episodes, and an outline. So basically what we're going to talk about, what the theme was. And these were kind of like a loose outline and a loose theme. Because I wanted to leave room for spontaneity because I knew things were going to happen on this trip. But if something didn't happen or we had like a long travel day, I wanted some kind of theme so that I knew I had a YouTube video in the bank. This was especially important for like episode 2 and 3, where I knew we weren't going to be doing any activities off airport landings or like flying things or like really flying, doing kind of like adventurous kind of flying. They were going to be more
things
so
that you can only do in a helicopter.
Yeah, exactly. I knew they were going to be more like long travel day style videos. So I was like, these videos, it's really important for me to have a thumbnail and title and idea for these so that I'm not shooting in the dark because nothing overwhelms me more than going into a shoot and not having an idea because you end up shooting everything. And that is very difficult when you're traveling via helicopter.
The first 2 episodes we could have done in a plane.
The episode 2 and 3 we could have done in a plane. Episode 1 was fully planned out because the first episode of all of the series are the most difficult because how do you make an episode that says this is what we're doing without doing any flying?
Yeah, it's like the whole, anybody who's going to click on this is going to be probably interested in seeing a helicopter fly somewhere. But
exactly.
Yet we're trying to make an interesting helicopter video without actually flying anywhere.
And this one was a unique one because we really had to tell the backstory of how we got the Millennial Falcon, the places that it's taken us, because when we're making series like this, like we assume that our audience watches it and they understand and they know us and they know the whereabouts. But like, what if you're a new viewer to the channel and you've never seen our content before? And then we're like, oh, we're doing this. And then it's like, well, hang on a second. Whose helicopter is this? How old is this helicopter? Why are you flying it across the country? What do you mean it's expired? So there's all of these things that we kind of have to talk about, like backstory wise, to make this make sense.
Yeah.
I think that's why this series in particular was so exciting for me, because there was that real like story aspect to it and like character development with the Millennial Falcon almost. Mm. Excuse me.
You love telling stories, don't you?
literally, like, the reason why I like doing these series is because I love telling stories. I love putting them together in post. I love editing them because it's like putting together a puzzle.
Mm-hmm.
And then I love marketing them.
Would you say that you have the ideal job?
Sometimes I just want to sit on the couch and eat chips.
That's not a job.
No. Oh, I could be a chip tester.
Chip tester.
Let's see. I'm trying to think of like what episode. So originally episode 3, which turned into be the truth about helicopter travel, which I think was a much more fitting theme for what was actually in the video, because the entire video was filled with truths. Despite somebody saying that it was clickbait, it wasn't. It was exactly what the video was about from start to finish. But that originally was supposed to be like 5 things that Chris doesn't fly without. But then that wasn't really that exciting. And we didn't really talk about it because, well, Paul, we did that interview with Paul. And then I was like, oh, there's more here than just like, here are the things that we fly with. Now, I did incorporate those into the video because.
Yeah, there was that.
A little bit of that
storyline. Yeah.
Yeah. Because I that's something that I do like when I'm watching like other people's series. It's like, what are you bringing that's really helpful? And that's how I've learned of what to bring, you know, mm-hmm. for our trips. But, and of course the Utah episode got cut.
Oh yeah, the whole episode.
So I lied. We were going into it with 7 episodes and that one got cut.
Right. Doesn't mean we won't go to Utah sometime though.
It doesn't. What are your thoughts about that? How much of the story did you have in mind ahead of time?
Oh, I mean, that was more of a thing. Because I mean, let's be real here. I didn't have much to do. All I did was fly the helicopter. That was like the easy job.
Well, and then like later we're going to talk about what your role was in the editing and something that you said that was pretty funny. The next part of this was, how do you go into editing afterwards when every day has changes? Oh man. That one's really tough because when every day has changes, you end up filming everything because you really don't know. You don't really have time to sit down and go, oh wait, hang on, this has changed. Like, what is the thumbnail and title now? You just have to decide, okay, this is kind of the idea that we're going with, or this thing happened, so like we're taking this route and running with it.
You go from a fully streamlined, planned out video that was pre-produced and then being strategic and sniper-like precision with all your shots and your content that you're creating, to the spray and pray, film everything, flying by the seat of your pants mode. And it creates not just way more work during, because you're paranoid that you're gonna miss something, but like way more work on the in post, trying to put it all together and assemble it into something that's a coherent story.
Yeah, 100%. Yeah, and it becomes really tiring because now you're filming way more and your mind is working to be like, oh, what did that thing, what, like, I got to remember this and that, and like, what's coming next? And what did we just do? And what do I need to say here that makes this all make sense? Thankfully, some of them were pretty straightforward because they are like linear. Like the story is linear outside of episode 1. It's like, we did this and then we did this. But mm-hmm. then how do you tell that story and make it interesting and add these like, so, okay, now we have to talk about how are we feeling? What's happening? Are you happy? Are you sad? Are you having anxiety? Are you hungry? What are the struggles? What are you feeling? What are you seeing? What are you tasting? What are you smelling? Like, these are all the things that I think about. I'm like, okay, well, I have to describe these things on camera because otherwise I'm like, we're here at this airport.
Now we're here.
Exactly. And like, that's a really basic type of video, right? But it's not a really interesting story.
Yeah. But like you said about the linear aspect though, I think that episode 5 was not linear at all. Like the main story arc was, but you had a lot of flashbacks or cutaways to Trent's interview.
Yeah.
Where he would be describing something that we're encountering in real time. So yes. I think that was, you know, that's still a complex edit.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, that was a really difficult edit. But it worked out really perfectly because, and the thumbnail and title still stuck from what I had planned it to be. He flies his plane like a helicopter backcountry flying with Trent Palmer, right? That was the title. That was the thumbnail.
That you thought of before we even left on the trip.
Yeah. And so I was like, cool, this is just going to be linear story. We're going to fly. We're probably going to do camping because that's what we had planned on. The weather kind of messed that up, which is fine. And then we did the interview and I'm listening to the interview and I'm going, oh my God, there's this fear of flying theme that's happening here. And at the beginning of this episode, when we started filming, I had probably the hardest couple of days of flying I had through the entire trip. I had a panic attack. I had a lot of anxiety. We hit like really bad turbulence that scared the shit out of me. And like now here he is talking about that. And I'm like, this is like full circle. You know, we're connecting now episode 4 with some of the anxiety that I was having with the anxiety I had at the beginning of this. And now like, so now his story is not just like Trent's story, which it was, but it relates to the things that I was experiencing. And not only that, but like when he talks so passionately about his passions for flying and how that mirrors what Chris feels about helicopters, Chris has a lot less, no anxiety about it or no fear of flying, but he has the passion where Trent has the passion and the fear. So then it started becoming a really interesting.
You have
interesting,
neither.
And I don't have the passion. I just have the fear. So now we started having an interesting story, right? And between that and then kind of touching on some of the decision-making, like, you know, we weren't expecting there to be thunderstorms because the weather's not like that usually. We had planned to camp, but now we have thunderstorms and bad weather and high water and like weird decision-making things. And now we're talking about making the no-go versus go decision. And now there's this education component. These aren't really things that you can plan on happening. Like I could say like, oh, Trent has a fear of flying. Like, let's talk about that. But like, I don't know Trent deeply well enough to be able to say like, I know this really specific thing about you because we're internet friends, right? We haven't spent like 4 years being in the room friends, having deep conversations. I only know what he puts on his YouTube channel.
How long was that interview? Would you estimate that we did with Trent?
Probably an hour and a half.
Yeah. Like it was a very long interview.
It was. Yeah.
Yeah. And we covered a lot of ground on it, but it was almost like a, something you could kind of like pick from and allow you to kind of create a few threads.
Definitely.
In the story.
Yeah. I think what helped on that was that we did the interview after all of our excursions. So it was almost like when we do our debriefs in the hotel room where we're like, oh, this was just after happening and everything is really fresh. So this is in our mind. So when we sat down with Trent, like we had known like, okay, the weather was weird. We were supposed to go fishing, but we didn't get to go fishing. And then we did all these things and oh yeah, you were talking about how it was bumpy. And so you kind of like ask questions. Thankfully, Trent is phenomenal on camera because he is a YouTuber himself.
Oh, he was so good.
He was so good. And he had so many good sound bites.
Yeah.
That just like, to me, just made the episode. And personally, I think it was the strongest episode in the series. It was my favorite. I don't know if it was, I don't even know if the whole series was good from like an outsider's perspective. I just know like, oh, this episode I felt really good about, you know?
Well, as long as you're happy with it.
I'm just talking a lot, so maybe you should. Okay. The next part of that was, how did this process of editing Heading West differ from past episodes of, or past series that we've made? Do you notice any like differences between this one and the last ones that we've done?
I think this is probably the most cohesive one yet. Mm-hmm. I think that, I mean, I'm biased, but I think they get better and better every series you make.
Thank you.
And I don't know how you're going to top it because that's just my opinion. But as far as differences from before, I mean, if you look at like the very beginning when we were doing Cold Island, which was really arguably kind of like our first helicopter series, not including the buy when we bought the helicopter.
Yeah, that was kind of like an impromptu, like 2-episode series.
Yeah, but heading or Cold Island was, I think there was like, it lacked a bit of cohesiveness. Like sometimes we interviewed ourselves. Sometimes we interviewed people around. It was all seat of your pants, really.
Every episode, while stylistically they looked similar in terms of obviously type, color grading, music choices, they were different. They definitely all
the
felt
formats
different.
Were different.
Yeah.
Yeah. But I mean, that's okay, right? It's
well, when you're learning,
you do whatever you want.
Yeah. When you're learning too, it's like, you got to figure it out.
Yeah. But. So I think that from that perspective, you did a good job kind of keeping everything very cohesive.
Thanks.
But otherwise, differences compared to our other series, it was definitely longer.
Yeah.
It was the longest trip we've done to date. And in turn, like the longest physical distance and the longest physical trip. And in turn, the longest project to produce.
Yeah. I think what's interesting about this one specifically that differs from the last ones is that like Cold Island we shot in 2 weeks. But we had some stops, long-term stops. Heading east, we filmed in 1 week. Mm-hmm. Heading north, we filmed in 1 week. Heading north, we filmed in 4 days.
Yeah.
Heading west was 3 weeks straight. And not only was it 3 weeks straight, but it was also like a couple of weeks leading up to it of shooting these extra scenes for episode 1 for that all to make sense, to like set it up for like 2 to 6.
Yeah. That was more of a complex production too.
Yeah, definitely.
And it was harder because like you didn't also want to do the exact same episode one that you've done for the last two series.
Yeah, it's like, how do you make episode one? Well, this is our Cold Island, heading west, heading north, heading east. So that's 4 helicopter series. How do you make episode one different for all 4 when they're all about the same thing?
Yeah, it's always going to be an element of planning.
Yes.
We've already done the weight and balancing to death.
Yes.
We've already we've talked about a lot of the gear we've used in every episode.
Yeah.
And every kit is different, mind you, but you got to make it not repetitive.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So I almost feel like I was cheating for this one because there was already a story there. It was like, oh, we clearly need to talk about like the lifespan of a helicopter and where the helicopter came from and like that whole like maintenance schedule and stuff.
Yeah.
And then obviously you get to throw back to all the other stuff. We still include some of the packing stuff because I really enjoy that type of stuff. When I watch other people's videos, I want them to deep dive into like what's everything you're bringing. Like, I want to know everything.
Shove them within your bags.
Yeah. And like, not only that, but like, what are you bringing for food? How are you cooking? What's your sleep set? You know, that. And I understand that I'm kind of like the minority when it comes to that, especially for like our style of channel. So I don't know what the fuck we're going to do for the next one. But something that we did do differently this time was we did voiceover instead of doing like building a set and doing a debrief.
We did. Yeah. I think that was ultimately what helped some of the parts of the story that maybe weren't as developed in real time.
Yes.
Where we kind of dropped the ball in filming.
Yeah. As I was talking about this in our like little debrief episode on our main channel, we're like, and you can see it, like you can see my mental health decline over the 6 episodes. Like it's not hard to spot. Right. But,
and you even edited it more favorably.
I did. Yeah. So you could see that decline. But as I was editing it, I could also see the decline in what I was filming, how much I was filming, and like the quality of what I was filming. So like, for instance, in episode 6, we like went to the pie company. We didn't film our pie. We didn't film eating it.
I ate the entire pie.
We literally didn't film anything. Like, thank God for Jenna, because she was like, oh, here's how the pie tasted and this is what it looked like. And I'm so happy. And like, she did it. She just swooped in like the fucking professional and saved the day. But like,
almost like she's a YouTuber.
Almost like she is a professional. But yeah, like I was like, oh no, we didn't film this and we didn't film that. In fact, I think that you filmed that entire pie expedition.
Maybe.
But like, I had no B-roll. I was like, how am I supposed to tell a story? Cause I didn't shoot any B-roll. Cause I was so done. You know, and so it's really difficult to be doing the trip, having this experience, and then trying to produce a series yourself without a team, without a dedicated filmer. Like it is really hard, but you can hide a lot with a voiceover.
Oh yeah. You just basically can link 2 scenes together, all the missing stuff. You just put in the voiceover.
Yeah.
And then boom, time has passed.
Yes. Like something happens or like you hadn't described how you're feeling, but you know exactly how you're feeling at that time.
Mm-hmm.
Write it up, record it. One thing I did do that was a little trick. I hadn't done a lot of voiceover work before. So that was like a whole new thing, like trying to figure out how to read properly into a mic and not plosives and all that shit. But what I did was as I was editing, I started writing the script as I was editing instead of editing the whole video and then writing the script after. So if I edited a scene and I was like, oh, there's this thing missing or this needs something to tie this together, I'd write it, I'd record it on my phone. I'd put it in a folder called FPO, for placement only. I'd tag it as a red color. And then I would take that audio clip and place it in as a placement and to see if that voice clip worked that tied into the edit. And so then I can pretty much finalize the entire edit and then go back and figure out what parts that I used from what I wrote and what I didn't use and then record the actual voiceover and then just plop it in afterwards versus like trying to make these editing decisions and like trying to leave enough gap and then just trying to fill that in with type afterwards, not type, script afterwards.
And then you record all of the voiceovers and then they just don't really work because you didn't really trial them. You weren't able to kind of dry run them.
Exactly. Or like they're too long or they're too short. And there's certain ones too where I'm like, oh, my voice needs to have this certain like cadence to it. Like I need to like kind of laugh here, but, or like this one needs to be softer or more serious because of like the tone. Whereas like if you just go and just, You know what I mean? It's a little, you have a dry run through it, like you said. You have a practice run. So you're like, oh, I said it this way and I didn't like that. Or I said it this way and I liked that. So I'm going to mimic that again.
The fucking apple pie thing.
The fucking apple pie thing. I love Austin Claiborne. He made that entire thing. Like, thank God. Actually, it's funny you brought that up. He made that episode because I was like, I bungled this whole thing. I didn't film anything. And I was like, oh my God, he set it up. He set up the apple pie thing.
He talked about the apple pie thing for you.
He did. And so I was like, I'm just going to use his thing.
That's too funny.
Yeah. So we talked about the voiceover, right? The voiceover helped. The other thing that really helped, I think, the story and understanding where we were and what we're doing was the map animations.
Oh, thank you.
You killed it.
Oh, thank you. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so funny because I was like, the map's like, where when you look at it, if you were looking at it from, like, I guess, an efficiency standpoint, like the amount of time spent for this amount of seconds on screen, they are a tremendous amount of work. Like,
they are, yeah.
Multiple hours for like just a second of video. And so, yeah, it was a lot of work objectively. Now, on the grand scheme of the gross amount of work done for this project, it was far outshadowed by all of the work, all the extra other work Becky did. So, but I was like, and of course I'm busting my balls, like trying to get the maps done, like down to the wire at the end. And of course I was doing long days, like on the weekends, like, okay, weekends here, working the entire day, making maps.
You also made it way more difficult on yourself when you were like, I'm going to plot 9,000 maps.
16,000.
What?
16,000.
16,000 airports on a map. And then it didn't work. And then it kept not working. And then hours later, I was like, the video goes live tomorrow. I need the maps.
So let me tell you, there's a scene where we're talking about classes of airspace and how many different airports are in each of the designated airspace categories. And when you get into untowered, uncontrolled airports, it exponentially goes up to like 16,000 of them. And I wanted to really drive home the size, how vast this network, this travel network is, because nobody realizes like there's this many airports in the US. Like when you think of airports, you think of like what, the 37 class Bravos,
yeah,
or however many there are.
But that's what we kind of talked about, that. And that's why we made episode 2, the biggest travel network you didn't know existed.
Right. But I wanted to show like, okay, here are the big airports that you're used to seeing and hearing about, but here's the insane, almost unfathomable number of airports that you've never even heard of, and just show that visually and have just like black dots covering the entire map.
Yeah.
And that's kind of what I want to show. They're like pop, 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 pop. They're just popping up. It's like, oh wow, okay, that's a lot. But all those dots are geo-referenced, so they are literally the coordinates of the airport, and the number is accurate. It wasn't just a bunch of random dots I made. These were actually plotted airports. And that was something that made my computer come to a grinding halt. I'm lucky that I used my brand new computer.
I want to talk about that after, but I want you to continue your train of thought on the animation. Yeah, I do want to touch on the computer.
So we did spend a lot of time. I did objectively, yes, spend a lot of time. If you kind of go prorated on how much time was spent on how little footage duration, yes, it was a lot of time. But whenever I came out, I was like, oh my God, these maps are killing me. I'm spending so much time on them. And I look over at Becky, she was like, world's smallest violin. She's like, oh, poor thing. You spent a few hours on your weekend making maps, and I've been busting my ass for 6 months making this whole freaking series, doing everything else. I'm like, yeah, you're right. I can't complain.
Yeah. It's funny because like I kind of pride myself on having a really healthy work-life balance. And I'm sure I've talked about it on the podcast before, like, outside of randomly filming on the weekends or filming like this in the evening times, most times I get up early in the morning and I edit until 4 or 5 o'clock in the afternoon, and then I'm done and I don't work in the evening.
And you fuck right off to the couch.
Fuck right off. Yeah, I fuck right off to watch Jim Baird on the couch. And then
you love your outdoor shows.
I do. I love my canoe shows. Yep. And then on the weekend, same thing. I do not enter that office on the weekend unless I'm like, well, I feel like editing a picture, or like we go, but no, for Heading West, I lived in there. You should have seen, it's still bad, but you should have seen my office when it was done. I think I extracted like 15 dirty cups and like 10 bags of potato chips. Like, it was bad.
Extracted is a good verb, because
thank you.
You literally had to come down on like a fast rope.
Yes.
Like, it was a friggin' SEAL Team 6 mission here.
What, to finish the edit?
To get your cups out.
Oh, yeah. Yeah,
it was such it was such a hostile territory.
Yeah, it was. It was. Oh, my God. Yeah, I know. It was the world's smallest. I was like, what did you just say? Did you just say making the maps was killing you? Meanwhile, I was going through my mid-series depression.
Yeah, exactly.
Where I was like, oh. I think the maps made the series. I think maybe I relied on them too much because I was like, well, fuck, I didn't film anything here. I need a map. And I think there was one, there was like 8 or 9 maps that you had to make. And you're like, fuck.
Yeah, that's the thing. Like every map required its own animation, which was like kind of programming the virtual camera and where it moved, which is one thing. But then like you'd have to like plot all of the spot dots on the map. And but I for every map I'd make a totally new composition so that I have like had a catalog of all the maps. And so I think that helps because some of the maps you invariably find errors in them. And so like it'd be helpful to go back to each map being like a project more or less. So that was helpful. But yeah, there was when you my heart broke when the last episode you were like, and we went from Buffalo, New York, across the country, and they're like, map of every single spot we went to and our entire track line, which was fine. But like some of the track lines, like maybe this is like something that people might find interesting, was we actually used when we were in real time using a map to show us getting from point A to point B. That was our actual like GPS coordinate track line. Like I literally downloaded like a full spreadsheet of our coordinates our transponder records, and like it's basically just records a data point every few seconds, every 10 seconds maybe, I don't even know, I didn't remember, but it would send that into ForeFlight, would log that as a track log, and you can download that, and then if I want, I would have to take that track log, then open it up in a spreadsheet program, clean up the data. Have, so it's just like a latitude and longitude with two headings, no other extra information, and then import that into an After Effects plugin called GeoLayers, and I can import that as a path, and that's how we got our track lines. So it was it was nice because we could show you guys exactly, literally, to like a 1 meter precision of where we went on this trip, and so by having to do that long trip, I literally had to take every single leg of the journey, put it into a spreadsheet to make one contiguous leg. But the problem was, is that there's 3 or 4 flights that didn't get recorded for some reason.
Oh, that's why there were straight lines. And
so I had to kind of like fudge it a little bit. And some of them are a little bit made up, but like, you know, you get
they're
the essence.
They're pretty close, yeah.
Yeah, but then like I couldn't figure a way out how to put all that back in and have one spreadsheet. So then I had like chunks of spreadsheets, and there's like they were divided by where I had to make up things, and I had to kind of figure out how to like put it all together in After Effects. So long story short, yeah, there were some workarounds for sure.
There would be no maps in these videos if I had to do them.
Well, you would have got creative,
you said,
right?
Spreadsheet, and my mind just left.
Yeah, like a lot, and the same with the airports, right? Like I didn't manually go in and say, okay, look up this airport starting with the A's. Okay, Albuquerque Airport here. Okay, now we're going to take latitude, copy that, copy the paste, put a dot on the map. And I didn't do that 16,000 times.
Yeah.
Like I had a database. I was looked online, found, you know, lists of all the airports. Actually, I think Wikipedia has a list of all the class, you know, airspace classes and then the airports themselves. But like some of them I actually had to, you know, do a little bit of automation. But I got essentially a semi-automated list of 16,000 airports with latitude and longitude, and then had to feed that into GeoLayers. But it took a long time.
I think that when you're making travel videos or travel series, it is so important, if you're not hiding your location, to actually show your location. Not necessarily like, oh, this is a really obscure place that I'm shooting that maybe you don't want like a lot of people to go to, or like maybe you're like off-roading on a trail and you don't want to share that trail because it's a secret spot and you don't want people to fuck it up. But like
that's a real thing nowadays.
It is. Yeah.
Like places that had gotten ruined because they become Instagram spots.
Right. But for us, like, especially if you're driving across the country or we're driving here and it's not, and it's on a public road or highway, it's adds so much to a story for the viewer to be able to go, oh, that's where that is.
It gives context.
Yeah. And, oh, I've heard of that place before. And maybe you want to look it up and see what else is around there on Google. That's what I do anyway. It gives context. And I think it adds a tremendous amount. And I find sometimes myself, like I'll be watching somebody's videos and I'm like, where are they?
Yeah.
Like, there's not even a location title. At least put a location title or something, even the state or the city or something, so I can say, oh, this is where, like, a general idea of where you are.
Something I can just plug into Google and just see, even if you don't show me the context of the map.
Yeah.
And that was something, too, I found, like, I was kind of thinking, what is the purpose of this map? Is this purpose of the map just because you didn't have B-roll here and you want to show something pretty? In which case, sometimes I like to punch in really tight on the map.
And yes.
Because the map resources we used had topographic data, and you could see, like, really high resolution renders of literally the mountains,
yeah,
and the hills and the topography. And so that was kind of cool, like really zoomed in, following our track line zoomed in, but it didn't really give you the context. So there was also oftentimes where I'd give you two options where it's like the zoomed in one and then the zoomed out one that shows, like, oh, here you can see the United States. Most people kind of know where, most people know what the United States looks like on, yeah, a map. So now they can say, oh, this is where they are in the United States and this is how far they're kind of going. So it's kind of this balance.
Yeah, it was cool to have both options because sometimes you show the big picture, because you also have to think, like, somebody who's watching this video might not know anything about the US or,
yeah,
anything about this area. So it's good to show kind of context and then take it in. And now, like, let's look at the intricacies of the elevation. And I think that was so cool on the West Coast maps where you could really see the mountains. Some of that was just to show you the elevation,
yeah,
to be like, this is where we are in relation to this gigantic mountain, you know, which I thought was really cool. I thought you did a fantastic job on the maps. They're way better than what I had pictured in my head.
Oh, thank you.
Can you give, like, a brief, like, without getting too far in the weeds, like, what you used to make those maps?
Johnny Harris.
Yeah, heard it here first, folks.
Exactly. No.
Johnny Harris.
Yeah, Johnny has published he has a tutorial on his site. On his YouTube channel, how he makes,
man.
I know, right? How he makes his maps. And I used that for the first time when we did our project Mozzie.
Mm-hmm.
And Becky wanted maps to show of Newfoundland. So
I had to put you to work somehow. Right?
True. Yeah. So I used his tutorial and just followed it to the T. So this is my second project using GeoLayers, and I hadn't used it in probably over a year. So I had to go back and watch his tutorial again to refresh my memory. But he has all the information there. But in a nutshell, what it is, it's a plugin that goes into a program called After Effects, which is basically a motion graphics program, part of the Adobe Creative Suite. I've been using After Effects since, oh God, like 2 decades now. So I have the advantage of, I had the benefit of knowing how to use that program already, but it would be a steep learning curve if you've never used After Effects.
That's why I got you to do it, because I had used After Effects before, and I couldn't. I tried it, and I was just like, this is not for me. This,
yeah,
is, like, an advanced thing.
Like, I'm not an After Effects power user, so...
You are now.
Well, I mean, I'm not writing my own expressions for it, right?
Yeah.
But I've known my way around it. It's familiar to me, because I've been literally doing this since, like, the early 2000s. But... Yeah. Yeah, it's an After Effects plugin, and then you're using another site, was it Mapbox?
I think so, yeah.
Yeah, and basically Mapbox, you can make a free account, and then that's how you style your map. So you can essentially turn off and on layers. Okay, I don't want to see all the minutiae of every single town. I just want to see the big towns. Or you can turn off certain borders. And here is where you can, this is like, they have an API that can plug into the back end of many utilities. So if you ever see an app like, say, like Uber or Lyft or like any app that uses or relies on maps, they're probably using some sort of custom Mapbox connection on the back end.
Oh, that's cool. I didn't know that.
Yeah. I think most of those services use Mapbox.
Now that you say that, I feel like Uber's looked like a very gray and black version of what we used for Mozzie.
Yeah. Like, I could probably emulate, having used Mapbox, I could probably get pretty close to like what the stylized maps you see,
mm-hmm,
but it allows you to stylize it, customize the color palettes, tell it what to draw, what not to draw. So that in itself is a little bit of a learning curve to learn how to use that. But that's how I got the topography. I turned on the high resolution topographic data, and then it allowed you to choose like your, almost like the colors that you're using to shade them.
Mm-hmm.
So I kind of chose the Mozzie colors based. I literally used an eyedropper.
Heading west.
I used an eyedropper to two on your mood board that you made for heading west.
Mm-hmm.
And I kind of like eyedroppered the sort of like sand colors, eyedroppered the pink to have you get a pink undertone. And then I set the, you know, where the sun was in the sky to give the shadows.
Yeah.
And that's all done on the Mapbox side.
That's so cool. I thought it turned out wicked.
Yeah. Then you publish it, made it public. And then you take that URL, you plug it into GeoLayers in After Effects. And then After Effects pulls the data. GeoLayers via After Effects pulls the data from Mapbox, and it draws and renders everything. So it's actually quite of a complex workflow, but it works. It works pretty well.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's how I did it.
I thought it was great. I thought you did a great job. So there's two things I want to talk to you about. First of all, one, I want to talk to you about your involvement with the color.
Okay.
But I also want to talk to you about your PC. You did all the map animations.
Yes.
And you also did the final color grade.
Sort of. You kind of felt bad for me and you put me in the credits as doing that because you felt I wasn't.
No, that's not true. I used a specific custom color grade that you made.
For a previous series. For Heading East.
Yeah. And I tweaked it a little tiny bit. But
you actually did all the color.
I did all the primary color correction.
You corrected all the clips to primary grade and then you slapped on my edit that I did for Heading East.
Yes, but...
And then tweaked it a little bit, probably to...
I did, but one could arguably say that look...
I was the original author of it.
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah, which brings us to the question, if you're using other people's lines,
who
color graded your video?
Yeah, team effort. Should have put both of our names. I felt bad.
Nah. No, because then it would just be like, produced and edited by Becky Beckham.
Yeah.
Filmed by.
There's a whole credit section. It's just your name.
It's just me.
Yeah. Map animations, Chris Nicholas.
Yeah. Yeah. I think you do. Okay. I want to talk to you about your computer for a second because a couple months ago, you built a custom PC with Gerald Undone on our channel.
Yes.
You built that for work in your office. It's basically top of the line PC.
I actually built another one too.
Well, we're not going to talk about that.
Okay. All right.
So
we have two Fractal Norths built with RTX 4090 graphic cards.
There's this thing in our relationship where when I'm having problems, so my main workstation is the Cheese Grater Mac Pro.
Uh-huh. 2019 Mac Pro.
2019 Mac Pro. It's got like 192 gigabytes of RAM.
Intel.
It's like, it's kind
192.
Of 192 gigs.
Yeah.
It's middle tier. I upgraded the graphics card. I could have gotten a better one, but I went based off of what YouTuber said was good enough for YouTube. It was a mistake. And I no longer listen to what people say is good enough for YouTube.
I no longer listen to YouTubers.
No, not that I don't listen to YouTubers. I do. I don't listen to what people say is good enough for YouTube when it comes to a computer. So I've obviously had a lot of issues with my computer, not crashing, but just not performing the way it should for how expensive it was and the specs of it. You know, your brain is always going like, oh, this new Mac got released. This is going to be better for making these series because they're significant projects. They're like, it's not just editing like one camera for a 12-minute video. It is like six cameras in different like
codecs
and like different Rec 709 adjustments and multiple adjustment layers and like very
time
extreme
transformations, multiple adjustment layers.
Yeah. Heavy corrections, keyframe like adjustments. Then add on top of that
multicams.
Multicam. Oh my God. I had a four camera GoPro multicam.
In H.265?
Yeah. But I had five of them. They are complex. So sometimes I'm like, is it my computer or is this just hard on the computer? You know what I mean? Is a new computer going to make a difference or is this just a challenging, is this workflow just challenging?
And the problem is you can't just trust like manufacturer benchmarks.
No.
And you can't in turn also trust a lot of like YouTuber reviews because like you look at the timeline where they used to test and it's like A roll with a little bit of B roll and a music track.
Yeah. There's not, you're
and
not mixing
like, oh, wow, look,
cameras.
This can rip through this footage. It's like, I would hope it can.
The point is we always say, oh, you should have a PC, whatever. You built a top of the line PC.
Yeah.
You really got to put it through the test using After Effects.
Mm-hmm. After Effects performed very well. In fact, having like Draft 3D on, I could basically edit in real time. The thing that it's quirky though, because I couldn't like some of those maps, well, all the maps had textures that I overlaid. And so
now you're getting multiple layers.
Right. But it was using the multiply blending mode for a text overlay to make the map look a bit grungier.
Yep.
That wasn't able to be rendered in Draft 3D.
Okay.
So I had to turn those layers off like to use that or I wouldn't be able to see it basically. So me having that computer was the difference between me being able to finish those maps.
Yes.
And not.
Yeah. You wouldn't have been able to finish them. I don't think on any other thing in this house.
And not only did I finish them, but I finished them and I got every single map done that I wanted, especially including the 16,000 point map, which was down to the wire. I almost didn't get it done because of sluggish things, but it got done.
Well, I appreciate you doing the maps. That's kind of all I think on the production side that I wanted to talk about.
And it's also the prettiest PC that you've ever seen. Admit it.
It is gorgeous. It looks fantastic in that office.
Thank you.
You're welcome. It looks good.
I am also fatigued right now, so we should end it.
Yes, we should. Thank you guys so much for watching. How do we end the podcast?
I was hoping you'd take point because I forgot.
Thank you guys so much for watching.
Or listening.
Or listening. If you want to see Heading West, you haven't watched it yet, it's ready for a binge over on our main channel, Becky and Chris. If you want to support this channel, consider checking out our merch. Link in the description box below. Okay, thanks. Goodbye. I gotta go to bed. I'm tired.
And cut. See.